My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. In 1980, the Alan Parsons Project released an album with the title song, The Turn of a Friendly Card. The Alan Parsons Eric Wolfson lyric said, in part, "There are unsmiling faces in fetters and chains, on a wheel in perpetual motion, who belong to all races and answer all names, with no show of an outward emotion, and they think it will make their lives easier, but the doorway before them is barred, and the game never ends when your whole world depends on the turn of a friendly card." The song may have referred to gambling and also the eternal cards we are dealt when we enter this existence. What is truly in the cards for each of us? Can the art of reading the tarot give us the insight, guidance, and direction necessary to make changes and improve our lives? My guest this week on Destination Unlimited, professional tarot reader Emma Toynbee, says the tarot can provide all important answers to the many questions of life. Emma Toynbee is a professional metaphysician, clairvoyant reader, astrologer, and fine artist trained at St. Martin's in London. She studied and has previously taught in the London College of Psychic Studies and runs a London-based practice in Liverpool Street, London. She makes regular appearances at high-profile PR and corporate events as a professional tarot reader, most recently at Amazon and Google events. She lives in London, England, and her website is emmatoynbee.com. She joins me this week to discuss her story and her new book, Positively Tarot, A Modern Guide to Mindful Living. Please welcome to Destination Unlimited, Emma Toynbee. Good evening, Emma.
Hi, Victor.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
I heard you giggling the introduction, the Alan Parsons Turn of a Friendly Card. What made you giggle?
I've never heard it before. It's just, yeah, it was funny.
That's funny. A New York Yank introducing Alan Parsons music to a British woman. I love that. That's great. I think you'd enjoy the album. It came out in 1980. I'm sure it's still available on one of the sources. Yeah. Now, your expanded bio says that your gifts manifested early in life. Please share your early experience with our listeners.
Well, I really haven't got anything too dramatic to tell you about early life experiences, but it was mainly just a very, very strong intuition and sensitivity, really, of sort of knowing what people were thinking, what was going to be happening. It's difficult to remember that far back, to be honest.
Were there any experiences that stand out, something in particular, were you something that came to you that you mentioned to someone and they affirmed it for you?
Not so much from early life, more sort of later on, really. It was the more extraordinary things were happening in my 20s when I moved to London. And, you know, London is this very old city, and I had quite an extraordinary experience on the in the tube, or the underground, as it's known, in King's Cross, where it blew me away, really. And this was the beginning of my journey in earnest. Like before that, I knew that I was very intuitive, but it was really at that point that I started to think, right, I'm going to develop this. So I was on the I was going down into the underground one day, and anyone who's from London knows that the escalators down into King's Cross Underground go very, very deep, and I just joined the top of the escalator going down, and I don't know what happened. I zoned out a bit, and I saw people traveling up on the escalator on the other side, they were at the bottom coming up, and I could hear what they were saying. I could hear every word of what they were saying, and they were at least 100 meters from me. That's how long the escalators are. But at the time, it didn't register as anything unusual. That was the weird thing about it. I didn't react to it. I listened, I heard everything they were saying, and you know, they weren't even talking about anything particularly interesting. It was just general chit chat. And I watched these people as they drew level with me on the escalator coming up from the other side and past me, and their lips synced exactly with what I was hearing. And you know, this was really unusual. And then I didn't even really allow myself to think about it until I'd reached my destination. And I don't know exactly what happened there. It was shortly after that that I started doing remote viewing training. I'm not sure if what happened there was remote viewing and I was just, it was clairaudience, and I was just tuning into something remotely, or I was also told after that that there was a sort of an accident in King's Cross, and there was a big fire in that particular tube station as well. And so I don't know whether it was mediumistic either, because I didn't really think about it until I reached my next destination. It was strange. It was really, really strange. And that was in my very early 20s. And it was after that that I started seeking out spiritual development groups and classes and the College of Psychic Studies and the SAGB, the Mediumship College in London as well, that has been running for, I believe, about 100 years now.
Now, these gifts are often shared linearly in families. Is there something in your family that parents or grandparents?
Please. So my mum's side of the family, the maternal line of my mum's side, not the paternal line, let's just get that right. There was a whole maternal line of the family that we never knew, who we came into contact with for the first time really about, when was it? It's about 10 years ago now, I think, or maybe a bit before that. And one of the first things, I'll never forget it, one of the first things that they said to us when we met them for the first time, the very first evening we met them, was, "You do know all the women in our family have the second sight." Mm. And I was so blown away. And they started telling me about stories, you know, little anecdotes. Sometimes they were mediumistic, a lot of the time they were just clairvoyant, or you know, knowing what's about to happen, you know. And they said absolutely all the women have it on that side of the family. Mm. And it's just, it made me feel kind, it was strange because I was meeting them for the first time, but it made me feel closer to them than any other line of the family that who I'd grown up with. You know, the rest of my family is very conservative, very rational, you know, scientists, wouldn't necessarily believe in this sort of thing, and actually just think I'm a bit bonkers, really. And so meeting this maternal line of the family was just such a confirmation for me. Like, you couldn't believe, because by this point I was already in spiritual development classes, mediumship groups. You know, so I knew I had this ability up until that point. But you know, it's very difficult when you come from a very conservative family who are constantly implying that, you know, you're just, you know, a little bit crazy, you know, you like, and then you meet this whole other side of the family who just get it.
Yes, I share that experience with you. What was it like to study and later teach at the School of Intuition and Healing and the London College of Psychic Studies?
Yeah, it was really good. Meeting, because it just reminded me of myself when I was beginning. When I turned up in London when I was in my early 20s and first saw the College of Psychic Studies, it was like something out of Harry Potter. You know, I'd gone there. It's in South Kensington. I'd gone there on several occasions and just stood outside and not dared go in. Because first of all, when you've been conditioned by your family to believe that these things aren't real, you just doubt yourself to start with. And then I just stood outside and looked at this place and just didn't dare go in. And so then to actually go in and like to pluck up the courage to go in and actually start sitting in their classes, it just reminded me when I started teaching there of how I felt when I first started doing that and how nerve-wracking it can be. But then I was having all the students were coming and some of them were complete beginners. And it was just really nice, you know, to come full circle like that and be able to really help people out and make them feel comfortable. Because it just reminded me of turning up there for the first time and what it was like, you know. So it was great to be able to just really help people and make them feel comfortable with that.
And one of the things that we share from time to time when we have guests of your nature is that if you have a child who is showing some type of gift, be it some type of clairvoyance or clairaudience or clairsentience, or they just say things that don't make sense to you, don't immediately chalk it off to their imagination. Encourage them to talk more about it. Accept them for the gift that they've received, because later on in life, it will prove to be very important. My guest is Emma Toynbee. She's the author of Positively Tarot, A Modern Guide to a Mindful Life. We'll be back with more of Emma after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Tune in to The Practical Intuitive, Mind, Body, Spirit for the Real World, with me, host Robin Fritz, Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern. I'll cover personal and business intuition, animal communication, mediumship, space clearing, past life regression, shamanic insights, energy healing, soul choice, and more, all to help you tap your own intuitive and healing skills. No ifs, ands, or buts.
So I'm a cat, and I just moved in with this new human, and she's got this little toy she's always playing with all day long. Tap, 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 bloop, bloop. She can't put it down. There it is. Oh, and get this. She even talks to it. Last week, she asked it for Chinese, and guess what? Egg rolls showed up like magic. Humans have cool toys.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
A ranger station.
I'd like to report a bear hug.
Okay.
I put out my campfire and Smokey Bear hugged me.
So you drowned the fire, you stirred it, drowned it again, and felt that it was cold?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but he's just letting you know you did good.
Bear hug from Smokey Bear. Status update.
I'm gonna let you go now. There are many ways to start a fire, but one sure way to put it out. Learn how you can do your part at SmokeyBear.com.
Sponsored by the U.S. Forest Service Ad Council and your state forester.
We are live outside the home of Joe and Rosie Goddard, where a pretty big tickle fight broke out just minutes ago. Sources say their father instigated the laughter. Let's go inside for a comment. Apparently, they have no comment. Dads, let this be a reminder that it only takes a moment to make a moment. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week is Emma Toynbee. She's the author of Positively Tarot, A Modern Guide to a Mindful Life. So Emma, tell us a little bit about your experiences with Vedic astrology and lucid dreaming.
Well, Vedic astrology is actually, it was through lucid dreaming that Vedic astrology came to me, because it was my friend Robert Wagner, lucid dreamer and tutor and author, who introduced me to Vedic astrology at one of his workshops. I think it was the first workshop where I met him, actually, and this was I think about 7 years ago now. So he introduced me to Vedic astrology, and it just, you know, it's a system which is in recorded terms 6,000 years old, which makes it tried and time tested, which I think is the most important thing, really, with astrology, because you need to test it out on real people's lives and see what's working and see what's not working. And I just found it resonated with me so much more than the Western system of astrology. And, you know, there are very interesting things about the Western system, and it does work in a lot of respects, but Vedic astrology just goes that little bit deeper. But the thing is, it's a very complex system, and it takes a whole lifetime to learn, really. You've got to, it's not one of these things that you can learn quickly or just through reading a few textbooks. You really have to keep at it and at it and at it. And I think people don't have so much time nowadays and like to dip into things and you know, not necessarily dedicate themselves to just the one subject or have the time for that. And so a lot of people are put off the Vedic system for that reason, which is a shame, because it is a fantastic system, and I've just found it so accurate, and my clients find it so accurate. This is the most important thing. I get such good feedback from using the Vedic system, more so than when I was using the Western system. So I had to swap, really. But the lucid dreaming, I mean, it's just so profound, lucid dreaming. It blows me away all the time. I sometimes have out-of-body experiences as well, but that's a bit more rare. Lucid dreaming is more common with me. And I could spend hours talking to you about my lucid dreams. So I don't want to go too deeply into them, but I get a lot of ideas from my books from the lucid dreams.
Give us an example of one.
Okay, so sometimes it depends what questions I'm holding in my mind at that point in time when I get lucid. Sometimes they can be questions about the nature of consciousness. Other times it can be a bit more mundane or a bit more practical, like what should the subject of my next book be? The most profound lucid dream I've had recently was where I became lucid in a science lab, and an inventor who, you know, looked pretty much like Doc Brown out of Back to the Future. But of course, what the dream is just trying to get across to you is, this is a scientist, this is an inventor. And it shows you something within your memory bank that will help register that just immediately, so you get it quickly. So this inventor came to me and he said, come outside, I've got something to show you. So he led me outside, and I was standing in front of a huge glass sphere, which was basically the size of a room. And up the side of the sphere was a set of steps. And he said, okay, climb up these steps with me. So I followed him up inside the sphere, and we got inside. Inside this sphere was a row of seats around the edge. And he said to me, this is consciousness. This is how it works. So it's constantly revolving. It's constantly spinning. This is the nature of consciousness. But the most important thing is that there is a center of gravity. So it's always balanced, but it's always spinning. And I can't tell you any more than that, because this is all going in my next book. I'm going to go much more deeply into this in my next book. But it was just so profound, because actually that I had that lucid dream whilst I was writing Positively Tarot. And I think the things that I was going into and the subjects I was researching for Positively Tarot just sort of tapped into my unconscious in a way. And then produced this lucid dream. do you know what? I can't remember what card I was writing at the time. I think it was one of the major arcana cards, but it started producing these lucid dreams, which were about the nature of consciousness. And it was super consciousness, really. I think this inventor was saying super consciousness. This is how it works. It's about the balance, keeping the mind in balance and equanimity of mind, but the important thing being the spinning. And it reminds me of so many ancient symbols in the world, like the yin yang, Buddhist swastika, you know, sun wheels, various monolithic carvings, you know, like these are all two dimensional, of course. And I think what he was showing me was the three dimensional version of these things. And it just blew me away when I woke up, because I hadn't had a lucid dream like that until that point. Often in my early days of lucid dreaming, I would just muck around and be really playful and have fun, you know, and ask things about physical mundane reality. But then as time progressed and I became more deeply interested in lucid dreaming, I started asking sort of, I guess, more profound questions of it. So it depends at what day you get lucid, what sort of mood you're in, what you've been doing that day, as to what comes up, really.
Now, you've also worked with artist Bryony Clark, experimenting with remote viewing. What is remote viewing, and what was your work with Bryony like?
So remote viewing is being able to psychically perceive information from a distance. So the distance could be, as I gave the example earlier, the 100 meters from the top of an escalator to the bottom, or it could be one side of the world to the other, or it could be Earth to space. You know, there's the distance doesn't matter. It doesn't affect the reading at all. So you're just you're given information in a fragmented form. So sound, fragments of images, smells, tastes, even touch as well. So you get a sense of the sort of feel of something. And it's really you're trying to build a larger image of a site. It's a site or a person or an event at a particular time in space, or a particular time and a particular space. So really, there's absolutely no limits to it. You can go to any point in time. And it's really interesting. I've used it for past lives, looking into past lives. There really is no limits. The only limits are in your own mind. So you can do anything with it. It's fascinating.
And what was your work with Bryony like?
So Bryony, yeah, it was interesting, because Bryony, like myself, comes from a fine art background. So she was interested in not just in the verifiable information, so me getting sort of what an object was that she had placed on the other side of a screen that I couldn't see, but she was also interested in how I was going to represent the subtle reality of that object. So in the same way that fine art works, you have you know, you're not just presented with a literal representation of something. You're getting the subtle symbolic form of it, of and so there was a crossover, really, and that made it more interesting, because we were turning something which was used or developed, really, actually, by the military for very, very precise work in getting fragments of information about target sites, but we were using it as a fine art form, which is quite out there, really. So it was really fun. It was really good fun, yeah.
How did your interest in tarot develop?
I remember moving into a new house when I was about 13, I think, and finding that the previous owners had left behind a wicker hamper full of little knickknacks and things. And within this hamper was a tarot deck. And it was like finding treasure, really, for me at that age. That was the first time I'd come across a tarot deck. And it was just so magical, and I just absolutely loved it from the moment I saw it, because there was, it, it was, it was difficult to explain. And, you know, this is the wonderful thing about tarot. It's almost like fine art in that way. There's no absolute meaning to it. It's just one of those things which taps into the subconscious and kind of gets us out of the way of ourselves to give a purer, more intuitive answer to things. It's funny because it does work in exactly the same way as reading fine art. A lot of people, who aren't trained as fine artists or aren't involved in the art world, look at fine art and, you know, kind of don't know how to read it, but they're going about it in the wrong way. It's not about being trained to read it. It's about sort of surrendering, really, and completely letting go of everything you think you know. And tarot is kind of the same. It's really just one of those things which is supposed to remind us that we don't know in order to get at that intuitive information. Because it's when you feel that you absolutely know something that's just ego, and it's almost creating a bit of a wall, actually, that to the purer, more intuitive information. And this is what I find really interesting about it, that there's this crossover with fine art and there is no answer. I mean, this is the wonderful thing about fine art, is that it's completely ambiguous. There's no one way of reading it. And, you know, people criticize fine art and say it's pretentious because people look at it and they don't understand it. But that's actually what makes it the opposite of pretentious. In that there is no answer.
The Eye of the Beholder. My guest is Emma Toynbee. She's the author of Positively Tarot, A Modern Guide to a Mindful Life. Emma, please tell our listeners where they can find out more about you and get your book.
I have a website, emmatoynbee.com, and I believe, thanks to the wonderful folk at HarperCollins, that my book is available on Amazon worldwide. And I think you have Barnes and Noble in America. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, and I think all the major bookstores. I'm not so familiar with them in the States, but I believe it's going to be in all the major bookstores and Waterstones in London and the rest of the UK. And just when in doubt, maybe go to Amazon.
And we'll be back with more of Emma Toynbee and Positively Tarot after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
You're listening to OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
When it comes to parenting, there are no perfect answers. But that's okay, because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on adoption, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Looking for inspiration?
Want to be inspired?
Not sure where to go?
Find Mark and Kim every Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern on Inspired Living.
Topics will elevate consciousness and range from metaphysics to the human and social experience and all things spiritual.
Welcome to an inspired community that offers support, encouragement, and new ways of thinking. You are the inspired and the inspiration.
Hi, this is Bill Maher. I can find humor in almost anything, but one thing I never laugh about is cruelty to animals. If you don't get the joke either, write People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, 501 Front Street, Norfolk, Virginia, 23510.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week is Emma Toynbee. She's the author of Positively Tarot, A Modern Guide to a Mindful Life. Emma, for our listeners who may be new to tarot, I doubt anyone's never heard of tarot or vaguely familiar with it, please share the history of the practice.
Wow.
In seven words or less.
Okay, so I believe tarot, the first tarot decks, although this is absolutely definitely debatable, I think one of the first tarot decks was Italian and they used to call it Tarocchi. But I'm sure that that's up for debate because I believe maybe the French would probably lay claim to it. Too, as being from France first. I'm not so sure. I mean, there's tarot decks all over the world. So you get gypsy tarot as well, Russian gypsy tarot, which is pretty special. But in terms of the European decks, I think it was Italy first. I believe actually they used to use just a normal deck of playing cards. And then that developed into the deck that we know today.
There are many versions of tarot cards, some artistically very beautiful, and others with various themes. Which deck do you use in your practice and why?
I use the Rider-Waite. I've just found that this, well, for me, it just is the most useful deck because the four suits gives many different options of life events that can occur. And the archetypes as well, there's just a broader range. And, you know, life is varied and complex. And when you limit the number of cards, it just doesn't give the wide range of events that could possibly occur in life. I mean, there is an argument though that you know, the cards are just the starting point, and often in my readings they are. So I might lay a spread of cards out. They might give me a starting point, but then when clairvoyance begins and, you know, claircognizance, and I start getting visions, then the reading of the tarot cards can kind of get left behind a bit. But then I make a combination of lots of different things in my readings. I use the tarot cards and Vedic astrology and clairvoyance and claircognizance and clairaudience and all of these things. So my readings can be a bit of a mishmash of using different tools. So everybody reads in totally different ways, though, and perhaps people will and this is, I began just using tarot, really, until I built up my confidence.
You know, it's funny you had mentioned the various clairs, clairaudience, clairsentience, clairvoyance, and I refer to my friends who have all of them as A-clairs, so you're an A-clair.
Yeah.
Now, the word arcana, which means secrets or mysteries, is used to describe the two groups of cards that are found within the tarot deck, the major and the minor arcana. What are some of the cards in both arcana and some of the myriad of interpretations based upon the layout?
Well, there's a number of different cards. I mean, I find the major arcana really fascinating. And I wrote my book in a slightly different way to other books I've read, in that I gave a lot more space to the major arcana. The way I see it is the minor arcana are just minor events in life, really. They're sort of everyday events. They're sort of nothing happening on a major scale. So the sort of things which you might forget the next day. Whereas the major arcana are major life events happening. So something which you're not going to forget the next day. And I just find those the more interesting cards. I mean, they are pretty dramatic looking. Sometimes life can be pretty dramatic. And often I find when people are coming for tarot readings, it's not at a time in life when everything is just sort of ticking along. Sometimes people come for readings at those times, but more often it's at times when, you know, there's big transitions happening and big transformations and change and growth and evolution. And so I often get, even though there's not so many of these major arcana cards, you often get them come up in the readings. Because, yeah, people are coming in these transition times in life. And, you know, it tells a story, really. It tells the story of what's happening to you in that moment. And that's what makes it so fascinating, the tarot. When people often ask me, actually, so how does the tarot even work? And I don't see it any differently to what's happening around you in life generally. You know, when we've got some event going on in life, it's trying to teach us something that we're supposed to learn, and so we can evolve, you know, and grow as human beings. And the tarot is just giving us a two-dimensional version of that in another form. There's nothing particularly magical about it, actually. That it's just, you know, or spooky or anything. It's literally just a two-dimensional form of whatever is going on around us. And that's what I find most interesting about it.
Now, I believe there are 22 major arcana cards and 56 minor. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, so the 22 major arcana, what are some of the cards that come to mind when you think of the major arcana?
Written a book. Do you mean my favorites?
Yes, what are your favorites?
I like the High Priestess, because that's a card I resonate with. Mm. It's a card about being awake and being able to really sort of see yourself, actually. And, you know, and this is the way we all grow, is through difficult times in our lives, to be able to see ourselves and how we are reacting in that moment, and how that's creating our reality, really. So the High Priestess, I think, is always going to be one of my favorite cards. And there's reasons I love each of them. I love the Fool for its openness, with it being the card zero. Anything can happen. It's kind of like the beginner's card, really. But if you cultivate a state of mind that we're always beginners, it kind of really helps in life, because as soon as we start to feel we know absolutely something, then it's closing us off and it's shutting us down, and then we're sort of out of a state of surrender, really, and then that kind of limits life or limits the experience we're going to be having. So for that reason, I like the Fool.
So the Fool is kind of like an apprentice, is that correct?
Yeah, kind of, although there are other cards in the deck which mean apprenticeship more. So like the Eight of Pentacles would be the classic apprentice card. But the Fool is really wide open. I mean, it depends on the context. It depends on the question in which it comes up, because sometimes the Fool can be quite negative, in that it can mean that someone's being naive or they're not thinking enough about what they're getting into. But I tend to look at the Fool in a spiritual way. So it means huge amounts of surrender. It's almost like a sort of teenager card, really, when people are at the beginning of their lives and they feel that the whole world is open to them and there's nothing which is closed off. There's no path which isn't open at that point. But as we get older, we start to close some of those paths off. So the Fool is really this wide open energy. But of course, it depends what combination of cards it comes with. Sometimes the Fool can... is quite literally we are being a bit foolish. So it really depends with most of the cards, actually, what combinations they're coming with, what's the outcome card, what's the question being asked. There's so many brilliant cards. No one really likes to get the Death card or the Tower, but I always quite like those cards, because it shows that even though something quite dramatic is happening, they are transformation cards. And we need these moments of transformation in life for change to occur and for growth to occur. And if we don't have them, then life just really sort of stays exactly as it is.
What about the Hermit?
The Hermit. I really love the Hermit. It's one of those cards where, you know, you look at it and the the first reaction is, okay, it's someone on their own, but then you notice that this person is holding a lantern and a lamp, and there it's really a card of being able to look within. And sometimes when we're amongst other people or out in social places, there's so many external distractions going on that it makes it very difficult to become aware of what's going on inside ourselves. And you know, sometimes people can seek out these situations where they're constantly distracted by external happenings because they don't want to look at what's going on inside. And so sometimes having these hermit moments can be really useful and really beneficial for us to turn a light inwards. And that's what the lantern that the hermit's holding represents, and just turning the light on inside ourselves, really.
And what about the lovers?
So the lovers, I mean, I've interpreted this card in a slightly different way to, I think, how other readers would look at it. For me, I mean, I really look at it as this big decision being made, and it's a card of attraction. And attraction isn't necessarily always related to our personal lives. It can be attraction of any kind. It's really a card about questioning the motivation behind attraction. You know, is it helpful? Is it going to bring greater happiness? You know, how is it? Is it just sort of something like we're gratifying ourselves in the moment, but how is that going to affect us long term? I think there's the lovers is an interesting card, because I think there's a lot of readers who would read this as a card of romance, and that's it. But I think it's a bit more complex than that. I mean, the scene on the lover's card is the Adam and Eve story, so which doesn't exactly have a happy ending. So, yeah, I mean, I've always found that card not to mean happily ever after. It's more of a attraction in the moment, but maybe there should be a higher voice that we're listening to, hence why we have the angel overlooking the scene to perhaps make us sort of tap into that higher aspect of ourselves and really think, okay, is this the best thing to be doing? Is this the right choice to make?
My guest is Ebba Toynbee. She's the author of Positively Tarot, A Modern Guide to a Mindful Life. We'll be back with more of Emma after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Change and growth are part of natural life and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the Om Times Experts program. With Om Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
The following is made possible by Dad.
Why was the basketball court all wet? Because the players kept dribbling all over it.
The Dad joke. Corny, groan-worthy, but also one of the simplest ways to share a moment with your kids.
Why do you have to be careful when it's raining cats and dogs? Because you might step in a poodle.
And kids that spend more time with their dads grow up to be smarter, more successful.
Can I tell you a cat joke? Just kidding.
And with any luck, funnier adults.
Why didn't the skeleton go to the dance? Because he didn't have any body to go with.
Dad jokes rule. So take a moment to make a moment and give your kid a laugh. It's as easy as going to fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
That's really funny.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week is Emma Toynbee. She's the author of Positively Tarot, A Modern Guide to a Mindful Life. Emma, what was the genesis of Positively Tarot? What called you to write this book?
Wow. Well, I think this book had been a long time coming, actually. Tarot, I mean, as I said previously, I picked up my first tarot deck when I was 13 or 14. And so it was a feeling that this was the right time for it. It seems that tarot is becoming hotter and hotter to trot, and people are getting interested. But the main reason I wanted to write it now is I had a real feeling that this is the people use tarot as a stepping stone to knowing themselves a lot better, and It just felt like the right time for it. I don't think this is a book I could have written 10 years ago. I've just developed and changed myself so much in this 10 years, and I just wanted to share that with people. It's interesting because I was writing other books and fiction and all sorts, and then it just sort of magically came to me that this was the right time for it. It was so synchronistic, really. Yeah, it just happened kind of almost magically. It was just the right timing for it. It was just HarperCollins came to me. They said, "Can you write a tarot book?" And I absolutely could at that moment. And it just happened like that.
Wonderful. How does Positively Tarot differ from other books on the subject?
I've written it in such an out-of-the-box way. I wanted to write something really experimental and in a completely different way to how any other tarot book has been written. I wanted to write it in a way that someone who was really logically thinking and rational could pick this book up and learn how to read tarot and really get something out of it. I didn't want it to just be for the likes of me, you know, people who've really developed their intuition, whether it's through spiritual work or whether it's through art, or I wanted it to be as accessible as possible to as many people as possible. Yeah, I just thought that would be the best way to write it, to have this logical card reading system, because one thing other books don't do is teach you how to read the cards in combination. And so this is an idea I was playing with for a while. How would you write a book that someone who was more of a logical thinker could pick it up and learn how to read the cards in combination to synthesize the information? And in all of these cards, there's a huge number of cards in the deck. And when they're put together in unique combinations, it can be quite overwhelming for people, particularly if they're just starting with the tarot as well. And so I wanted to create this logical system whereby people could see two seemingly unrelated cards right next to each other and learn how to synthesize the information in both cards, and so you could read them together. And that's what I found that most tarot books don't do, and understandably, really, because the book could be never ending. And so I'd managed to kind of find a way that I could abbreviate the cards and do this within a word limit.
How much study, practice, and dedication is needed for this?
It depends, really. It would depend. Some people will just pick it up quicker. Others will have to study for a bit longer. It really depends. If you're coming to it for the first time, you could learn relatively quickly. I don't think there's a definitive answer to that. It really depends on the person, how much time they've got, I guess. Like how dedicated they are, or just some people would just have a natural ability, you know. But I hope the way I've written the book makes it easy enough for pretty much anyone to pick it up and learn from it.
Now, you mention in your book how the images on the cards interact with the limbic intuitive system of the brain, producing faster responses than are achieved through normal cognitive processes. How does this work?
Well, I think when it's pretty much the same as reading fine art. There is no answer. It's like when you feel that you absolutely know the answer to something, it's almost like shutting off intuition in a way, because often it's our logical mind analyzing and processing. So it's really a case of kind of complete surrender. Like, you look at these images, you understand that you don't know the answer, and through that you almost take a leap over logical thinking into your intuition or intuitive center, that then brings an answer that seemingly comes from nowhere. There's no logical pattern to it. There's no way of working backwards and seeing how you came to it. It's just literally drops in from nowhere, and that's the type of information that you know is good stuff and really accurate, because when we can work backwards and see how we reached an answer, we know that this is not coming from anything intuitive. It's reasoned and it's logical. And so the cards being, they are sort of partly illustrative, but they do work in the same way as fine art, in that they're also quite subtle, and there's many, many ways of reading them. And in that way, they're sort of ambiguous. So it's really accepting that there is no definitive answer that gives the answer. It's kind of a paradox like that.
Is there any preparation that you suggest for people about to work with the cards?
I guess it's like cultivating a beginner's mind and holding on to that. To go into it thinking you know already is only going to produce the opposite to what you want. It's kind of paradoxical in that way. It's kind of offloading everything you know to be able to find an answer. And it feels almost counterintuitive, the process. But that's the way it works. You just have to surrender and accept that you don't know to get something which is more purely sourced.
Mm-hmm. What do the cards and your other practices say about the world as it is today and the world as it will be tomorrow?
I'm hoping that, people are becoming a bit more open-minded to these things and a bit more exploratory, particularly with themselves. I guess it's about self-exploration, really, and seeing yourself and understanding your responses and your reactions to things and how that determines what happens in your life and your reality. And so the tarot, in a way, is kind of like a mirror in that respect. So I'm hoping that that things like tarot and any other forms of divination or anything which is sort of self-reflective will start to become more widely used, because they can only benefit you, really. The longer we stay in the dark, the more we suffer. So anything which brings us out of our own ignorance is only going to be a benefit to us and the wider world. I mean, if you look at the problems that we have at the moment, environmental problems, social problems, it's largely due to the ignorance of people. And, once we address that within ourselves, we improve our own lives, and then the surrounding environment as well benefits from that. So, yeah, we're not just helping ourselves, we're helping everyone and everything by looking within, really.
What would you like readers to take away from Positively Tarot?
Even though it might be tough to really look at ourselves and look at the things that are going on in our lives and how we may have contributed towards them, that just really helps people grow, change, transform, and suffer less and be happier. Really, it's it's basically that. And I don't know whether there's what I hope they get from Positively Tarot is that it's not sort of bed knobs and broomsticks and all magic, and you know, that it's actually just something which is really grounded and more concerned with psychology and well-being and living a healthful life. I like a bit of magic in life, but not at the expense of something being discounted or the benefits of something being overlooked.
Take the best of both worlds, the best of all the tools that are offered to us in this lifetime. My guest, Emma Toynbee, her new book, Positively Tarot, A Modern Guide to a Mindful Life. Emma, please, one more time, tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you and your work.
Well, thanks, Victor. So my website is emmatoynbee.com, and you can get my book, I believe, on Amazon worldwide, Barnes & Noble in the States, all the major bookstores, Waterstones in the UK. Yeah, that's it, I think. Yeah.
And thank you so much for joining us and sharing your book and your work with us.
Thank you, Victor. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor, the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.